Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 212. I must apologize out there to the people. I posted 211 today. Just today. I had it already.
You did, and I'm not going to circulate it till tomorrow morning.
Okay, yeah, and so I'm going to wait. I'm going to put I'm going to publish this one on Wednesday.
Okay.
I had 211 ready to go. It was done. The MP3 file was made, the cover art, which was Michael Dudikoff, I couldn't resist, was made, and I don't know. It just sat there. It just sat there on my computer.
I thought it was just you were on spring break and just taking a break. That's why I didn't ask you about it.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. You know, I was on spring break and just kind of enjoying some downtime. And we had a bunch of projects that we were doing here at our house. It completely slipped my mind until this morning, and I was like, oh my gosh, I got to take care of that, man. Whew. Oh man, but we have got a really good show. Of course, we're going to be talking about Tony's BYOD requirements. Is EdTech really dead? Is Tony wrong? Tony's typing something about Elon Musk here.
None. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Since we're talking about
I haven't read that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that one.
We can talk about, is EdTech dead and is Twitter dying?
That's a really good topic. That is a really good topic. Just if you're a golf fan, then you know the Masters, which is arguably the largest and most important golf tournament of the year, happened this weekend, and my wife was just peering, just poked her head in the door and asked me a quick question. Don't worry. Okay. And we have a new winner this time, first-time winner. His name, he's from Texas, is Scotty Scheffler, and he won. He was pretty good. But the big story was Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods actually played in the Masters this year.
He's had to be on the mend, right, from the car accident?
Yeah, a year and a half ago, he was in a car accident, which almost claimed his life. There was talks that he may be paralyzed from the waist down, that even if he wasn't paralyzed, he may never walk again or may never be able to walk unassisted again. He was out there. He played all four rounds. He played very well the first day, but I think his body just started to give out on him and betray him. As he was walking today, there was noticeable limping. He looked very uncomfortable while walking the course, and for people, these courses are there's lots of elevation on these courses, and so you'll be trudging uphill or down or a fairly steep downhill, you can't have assistance. It's one of the PGA rules. You can't have a cart or a wheelchair. I don't know a scooter of some sort. You can't have that stuff. You have to walk the course. He didn't finish very well. He was
47th. I looked it up.
Oh yeah. There you go. Yeah. The fact that he came out there and played at all is just remarkable. So kudos to Tiger, and hopefully he'll play a few more tournaments, but it was kind of sad to see him because here he is, this great player. And it's very clear that this is the end of his career. Like this is not the beginning of the end. This is kind of like we're at the end of his career.
Yeah.
So
going to play. He'll probably do what, another year or two?
I don't know. Then I'm not sure if he'll even maybe play some more this year, but I don't know if he'll play next year. I just don't know if he'll do it. But anyway, it was kind of cool. It was just kind of cool to watch, and it was a good Masters. There was a lot of drama, a lot of great shots, and just it was good. It was fun. It's fun. So, there you have it.
Well, the Babylon Bee said that they were going to make golf more exciting by just playing football.
That would make it much more exciting. So, Tony, I see you have some CISSP news for us.
Yeah, this is actually ridiculous. So, this week in the mail, I got this package, and I opened it up, and it's like a – I've got it here. It's like a thick folder.
All right.
And I opened it, and on the left side of it was the certificate. So I was like, oh, they put it in like a protective folder
yeah.
so it wouldn't get crushed. But then it also came with like a pin that you like wear on your collar to show that you've completed your CISSP. But it says CISSP on it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, should I wear it every day? And my wife's like, no, that's me opening it. It's the same. So yeah, it's like a little CISSP pin. It's ridiculous. You could put it on your tie or you could put it on your, but it's not really a tie tack, so to speak. Well, it's just a pin.
Well, when I'm looking for somebody's CISSP, I don't care about their certificate. I need to see the pin. If they don't have the pin, I'm not hiring that person.
Yeah, and the thing is, the people that probably take the CISSP, we would definitely prefer a challenge coin that we can pull out and be like, here it is. This proves it. Here, I'm going to... I've actually found a photo of it online, so I'm gonna put it in there for you. So it was just kind of ridiculous because I'm like, my wife's like, "Don't wear that to work." I'm like, "I'm gonna wear it every day," but I am gonna wear it. So we have a board meeting in May. I am gonna wear it for the board meeting to see if anybody notices.
Okay, hold on here. Oh man, the thing looks so cheap. Oh gosh,
it does look cheap. It's cheap. Yeah. So it's ridiculous,
man.
The certificate's super nice. Okay.
But okay.
The yeah. So, yep. I just thought you'd find that funny.
I do find that. I find that pretty. It tickles my funny bone. That's pretty funny.
Now, the best thing to do would be to wear the pin like on my pocket, and then when someone argues with me, I'll just be like, stop right there, and I'll point at it
just
and I'll be like, you need to really reconsider what you're getting ready to say. Look at this. And then just make it like the ultimate badge of authority.
Excuse me, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am?
Can you read this pen? I mean, do you understand what we're dealing with here?
It'd be pretty cool if you had like a little pocket flashlight and you just kind of tap it with a flashlight and then shine the flashlight in their face and like, have you been drinking, son?
I could rig an LED to a watch battery and then put that on the pocket and just constantly illuminate the pen.
Oh,
like a little sign.
That's awesome. That's even better.
Yeah. So
you're official. So anyway. You're legit now. You get the pen. I mean, do they have like, I imagine CISSP also has like annual conferences and stuff like that.
Yeah, they do. And I'm going
to. Do you have to wear the pin to attend? Or?
I think that you have to wear the pin if you have one. Yeah. I think they really want you to. So now I'm looking at the challenge coin option.
That'd be better. Yeah.
Yeah. He's pulled out the bar. Think twice.
Oh, slow your roll there, sir.
Yeah. All right. What's next on the agenda, Patrick?
Oh, here it is.
What am I drinking?
Everybody's favorite question to be answered every week. I'm going to go first because I'm just drinking iced tea. Just iced tea.
And I'm drinking a New Belgium 1554.
Yeah.
Good beer. It's really, really good.
I like the New Belgium beers. They are good. I might have to try that. I might have to give that one a go.
It was on sale. So I always, on Fridays, if I go to buy beer, I just actually try to choose a new one that's on sale. I just roll the dice. It can ruin my whole weekend. That's what you need to understand.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's going to ruin your weekend this time. I think you got a winner. I've never had the 1554, but it says here, it says a bright taste and dry chocolatey finish. It's not a porter, not a stout. It's 1554. And they have a picture of it poured in the glass there, and it's very dark like a porter. But wow, yeah, very cool. Very cool.
It's only 6%. It's not strong. It's good.
All right. Okay. So there it is. Now, Tony, you have your BYOD requirements and laptop purchasing plan for 2022.
He's excited.
Oh, man.
He's fired up. Oh. All right. So what I started doing.
Skype, what's going on here?
Okay. We had some static, so we had to start over.
Yeah.
We'll edit that out. BYOD requirements. So I started during the pandemic organizing purchases for parents because they were buying stuff and it was getting delayed. So I just started doing these like kind of group buys. And with Apple, it's easy. We check online. We have like the price doesn't really change for a long time. So it's easy. With Chromebooks and Windows computers, it's not as easy. So I can lock in a price with like Dell for 30 days. And then I basically take the orders directly from the parents, and they use the same system that we use for tuition payments, and they purchase a laptop, and then we just literally transfer the money to the vendor. So that's how we're doing it. So it's been good so far. Dell gave us some pretty good prices. So I always give the parents for the Chromebooks two choices. One in the $200, $250 range, and one in like the $400 range. $400 ones are just bigger, the bigger screens usually. They're a little bit faster, but most people just buy the larger one because they want a larger one. And we have not gone with any touchscreen recommendations this year because we have found the slowest parts are for touchscreen laptops. So this year, everything that we're recommending parents to buy, even if they buy on their own for Chromebooks, is non-touch screens just for repair times. And we've been tracking that. Even when we send them off, they take longer to come back than non-touch screens.
Yeah
So
I can confirm that when we look at screens, the touch screens are always delayed. It's always like 4 to 6 weeks, and a regular non-touch screen we usually can get within a week or two. So
now if we do Apple laptops, and right now if you order Apple laptops as a school and you order five, like you have to order in fives, so 5, 10, 15,
yep,
whatever, the price is coming back at $779 for the M1.
Oh, that makes sense, because they're releasing a new MacBook. If all the rumors are a new MacBook Air is coming out, this makes sense. They're trying to clear out inventory.
Yeah. So the prices right now are great. So I think that's the most important thing. If you're working at a school and you have an account with Apple, you got to buy in fives, but it's great. Like, that is a great price. That is a competitive price against any Windows computer, really, in the same spec range.
I would say so. Yeah, so that's a great price, yeah. Man.
Yeah. So again, you know, we only recommend the base model. I had a long conversation with a parent this week in high school, and they were asking me about Chromebooks instead of an Apple or Windows computer for high school students. And I was honest with them, and I said, right now, looking at what your child is doing, they could do all their work with Chromebook and it'll be fine. I'm like, the problem is they have two more years of high school. So what if they decide to take graphic design? What if they decide to take robotics? What if they what happens if they want to do programming or engineering? So you would end up having to get a second laptop because the Chromebook isn't going to be able to handle some of that stuff.
Yep.
So, but the truth was, Patrick, that I think for the most part, we're getting to a point where the majority of students can do most of their work with a Chromebook, and Adobe's beta testing right now the Creative Cloud in the Chrome browser for Photoshop.
Wow, that's full Photoshop. Oh, man.
because we got invited to do the beta. I don't think we're gonna do it. Like, we don't really, like, we're not gonna do it mid semester. We might try it next year, but that's a game changer. And Adobe Spark already works on the Chromebook, and it's great for, like,
yep,
core stuff, like basic stuff. Canva's good. Like, you can get free Canva, but I still think Adobe, like, Canva's better for certain things, but Adobe Spark has a lot of good tools. So, you know, Photoshop and like the system that we use for yearbook now is actually all online. The kids do everything through a browser.
Yep.
So
same here.
I'm just, if Photoshop can be in the browser and possibly Illustrator, then I think we're pretty much there, because the engineering class could have just a set of laptops that live in there. Mm-hmm. To be used for things that need specific, like, tuning. So, like, it's like with 3D printing. I mean, I actually set up a computer for 3D printing. Sure, kids can use their laptops, but if I set up one iMac, it can run like 4 3D printers. So it's just better. And, or you could set up a Windows computer, and it's probably better than an iMac, to be honest, with 3D printing. But you just need a USB port for each printer. And then you can run multiple jobs, or you can put a lot of printers now go on the Wi-Fi, and you can use little cloud system that comes with the printer. The point is that I would build a system for 3D printing. I wouldn't really ask the kids to configure their laptop to do it unless they were doing it a lot, like they wanted to, like, work in the 3D printing lab every day. So really, for the special stuff, even for robotics, I think we're just getting to a point where a Chromebook might be able to do the job. It's a hard argument, like, when you look at, should I spend between, let's say, grade 8 and grade 12? I mean, I would almost say a Chromebook would be fine through grade 10, and then grade 11 and 12, maybe you buy the Apple so that you're ready for high school and then 2 more years of university.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of there, maybe. I want to have that discussion more going into next year, because that's kind of where my thinking is. First off, I would only do that if the Chromebooks were standardized. Like, I wouldn't let the families go out and shop Chromebooks. They're going to have like an enterprise Chromebook, because the kids are going to be watching movies. They're going to be doing all kinds of stuff that they would need an enterprise Chromebook.
Yeah.
But then that also simplifies things, because we can load GoGuardian into it. It makes the security a lot easier.
Yeah.
Gives us kind of one platform for 80% of the students. So yeah, that's just kind of where I'm at. But the biggest news, I think, is if you're at a school and you have an Apple account, get those M1s now. If you think you're going to need 20 M1s next year, buy them now.
Yeah.
You're going to save, I bet you're going to save like $200 a unit. So you're going to save like $4,000 if you can front those laptops before next year.
I am looking up. We have a, so our teachers use, it's not what I wanted. Our teachers use Macs, and we have a replacement cycle. We keep them for teachers keep them for 4 years. And I'm looking right now how many Macs that we're (clears throat) 16, but we could round that up to 20, because we always have a couple Macs that are kind of stinky. Yeah, that's right. It's 16. So yeah, that's awesome. That's fantastic. Yeah, we may be putting that order in this week. Take advantage of that, because I can't imagine the new MacBook Airs, outside of the new M2 processor or whatever they're going to call it, is going to be any different. You know,
that would be true.
You know, the only thing I think they might add back is like a SD card slot, and gosh, who knows? They might even have that.
And right, I would love to have an SD card slot. I don't think most people realize this. I have like a $400, maybe. No, it was like $350 Lenovo. And I do run Linux on it. But I bought it because it has an SD card slot.
Yep.
And it comes with like a 128, I think, you know, SSD in it. And then I bought, a high-speed SD card. Now, most people don't really think about SD cards, but there's a lot of different types.
There are.
So I bought a type of SD card that is designed to be used as a hard drive. And it wasn't cheap. It was like, it was probably like $100.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. But I put it in and I doubled my storage capacity, and I use the SD card constantly, and it's great. And when you travel and you do other stuff, just as a little bit of security here, if you are disciplined enough, you put your files, you save all of your personal stuff on your SD card. Or if you're using software that saves data to your computer that's personal information, direct it to save to the SD card. And when you travel, you pop that card out of your laptop, you put it on your person, like in your wallet or something. Mm-hmm. So your computer and your sensitive data are separated. And then when you get to wherever you're going, you can pop it back in. But by doing that, you create like an extra layer of security. So I think they're great to have.
Yes, yes. For example, on the Zoom PodTrack, it's not as fast as yours, not even close, but it's still a speedy one because it has to be able to read write in real time.
And
the same thing, like if you're using an SD card and you're recording video, like you probably have to have getting up to your standard where it can actually read and write, so you don't get gaps, like it doesn't have to buffer or anything like that.
And you can run, like, you can put an entire operating system on an SD card, so you literally can like have different computer systems on the SD card. You pop them in when you want them and pop them out. And if you want to see that in action, watch the first season of Mr. Robot.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. That's a great show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great show, but it can be disturbing, so it's not for children.
No, it's definitely not. It's definitely not. And I was just looking here I saw an article from PC World I just brought up about Adobe Photoshop in the browser. And this was October of 2021, so not even a year ago. They're talking about it's going to be a stripped-down version. It's not going to be the full version of Photoshop, but really, most people don't even use 90% of what's in Photoshop. You figure out how to do certain techniques and you just kind of stick to those techniques. It looks like it has a lot of the tools there. You can do layers, which is important. It looks like you can do layer masking, which is huge. They've got the magic selector tool. I mean, so I bet for people doing, if they're just learning graphic design, And they need to do some heavy lifting. They probably could do that on a Chromebook when this gets out of beta. But who knows when it gets out of beta? Adobe takes their sweet time doing everything because they're Adobe, and they have no real major competition. They just don't. They just do whatever they want, however they want.
Yeah, they do what they want. They've got the market.
They do.
For the entire planet.
They do. There's nothing like it. That's cool. That's cool. I like that. That is a good plan. And that's definitely a good question to ask. Like, you know, for freshmen and sophomores, will a Chromebook be enough?
And if it is, like, it's great because it's a low cost piece of equipment.
Yep.
And students, the younger they are, the more likely they are to break stuff. Starting grade 11 with a new laptop and just saying, hey, this is going to be your laptop at least through your first year of university. That's a good move because the students are more likely, I think, to take care of it. But that's kind of where my thinking's at.
Wow, I like it. I think that's really good. That's a really good plan. Excellent. Okay. Now, Tony, is EdTech really dead? You mentioned it. You said it was dead a couple podcasts ago. I've been thinking about it.
Yeah.
Is it really dead, though? Is it really dead?
I mean, I feel like it is, according to LinkedIn, but, you know, I'm living in a bubble, so it's hard to say.
Just, Jackson, Mississippi is just an echo chamber. It's just an echo chamber there. You know, you only hear what you want to hear.
That's right.
I don't know if it's dead. I think it's just maybe transforming. I think at the around 2010, I think somebody going out and finding and vetting services, like, and then teaching people how to use those services, or coming up with ways to use technology in the classroom. I think that's, you had a tech coach that would do that, but I don't know if schools are in such a need of tech coaches anymore.
I think they don't think that they're in a need, because just this whole concept of, oh, the kids already know how to do stuff, it's just gotten out of hand.
Oh yeah.
They don't know how to do anything.
No,
like no. At all. They don't even read information. They just stare. Like if they have a computer and it asks them a question, they just stare at it. It's a little out of control.
Yeah. The whole idea is, oh, well, they grew up with it. And we've talked about this on
for years.
For years. On podcast. Yeah.
So just to be clear, I'm not talking about a particular set of current students. I'm talking about students that I've been working with for maybe the last, like, I don't know, five or six years. It's gotten really bad the last 5 or 6 years. So I could definitely see like a cutoff point to where kids were better problem solvers, able to like run their hardware, able to do basic stuff like set up printers and whatever, to this complete dependence on asking people every single time there's a small problem.
Yes. Yes. I have seen that, but I'm dealing with middle school kids and elementary children for the most part, where they just, they don't have that, initiative. I want to say, usually somebody has to tell them, well, wow, your screen is broken on your Chromebook. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do about that? I don't know. Why don't you go tell technology? Okay. it's usually the teacher sends them down. But I don't know. That's just, I definitely see where you're coming from with that. And I put on our show notes about the digital fetus. That was, that was episode 54.
That's the basic, that's your basic level.
Yeah.
Of user.
Yeah. Where, you know, just because they grew up around it doesn't mean they instinctively know how to use it. You know, like I grew up around cars. I don't know anything about cars. I don't know how to change or fix a carburetor, or, you know, maybe an oil filter, an air filter. I could probably look in the instruction manual and figure that out. In theory, I know how to change the oil, but that's about it. That's about it. You know, I don't think I could do much else. But I've been using cars since I was a teenager, and been driven around in cars since I was a child. So it's,
That's a good point. Like, unless you actually learn how to work on the car, just being around it doesn't mean that you can really do anything significant with it.
Yeah. And another one to do, I think that would be more, another example, if you want to make it a little more attuned to teachers, are, you know, take a look at students. They're around teachers for, 12, 16, 20 some years of their life. That doesn't mean they know how to teach. You know, they've seen it for a very long time, but that doesn't mean they have any ability to walk into a classroom, manage the classroom, do lesson plans, do all the things that are required for a teacher, and do them well. It takes quite a bit of skill and focus and grit to be a good teacher.
So, like, I'm looking over, so I've got the current ISTE standards up for students, and I'm actually looking at the course syllabus in ISTE University where people can learn how to get these standards, like, going in their school. And when you read over them, you'll see the biggest gap is that the standards are good ideas, but you know, there's nothing in here that goes to specifically using technology to truly like make something. So there's, you know, for example, using digital tools to construct knowledge. Well, that's fine. But when you get down to innovative designer, in this module, we'll explore the innovative designer standard, where students use a variety of technologies within a design process to identify and solve problems by creating useful imaginative solutions. That actually seems like a good idea, but when I compare that to, you know, and I'm always, you know, I'm just a broken record with the MIT Fab Lab stuff. When I compare that to the Fab Lab, they do have imaginative solutions, kind of level one to get people doing stuff, but they move up to, hey, design a prototype of something and see if it will work. That's a solution to a problem. And it's different. Like the point is to identify a problem and build something to try to fix it, and then iterate through that and try to like tune it up and make it better and make it better. You don't really have that. You just kind of have a like a brush, like a simple level one piece, and then you move to the next one with these standards. So of course a teacher could read these and say, oh, I need to go deeper. That's, you know, ISTE's job isn't really to tell you how to do your job. But it would be good if under like innovative designer, it said students will learn to iterate through a process multiple times to develop imaginative solutions that progressively get better, and they'll learn to document their problems and, you know, work as a team, like whatever. Like anything like that would be better, because it, in the reader, when you read that, would infer that, hey, this is like, we're going to really work for a long time on this one concept.
Yeah.
And we're going to learn a lot by just really going deep into this one concept. And there's just not a lot of depth in these. You do a lot of just, again, like kind of shallow things, and it feels really good and you feel like you're moving forward, but you got to do things over and over to really develop an understanding of how they work.
Yeah. And the ISTE standards they had just kind of like the standards that you see now. But then they actually had them broken down by like early childhood, you know, elementary school, middle school, and they don't have that anymore. It's almost as if they're like, we're going to be as vague as possible about this, and you use them however you interpret them however you want to. So like students select and use digital tools to plan, manage, and manage a design process that considers design constraints and calculated risk. So somebody could be like, oh, you're going to use Canva and you're going to make a cover for your book report. Done.
Yeah.
We've done innovative designer. We're good. Fantastic. And people can take these and just be very superficial with them.
Yeah, and then mark them off as if they're done.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem, is if you even believe you're ever done,
that's the problem. There's the problem right there. Yeah,
you're really done with these.
Yeah. Another thing they don't have in here, and I've seen this from I can't think of his name right now, but I almost said Jeff Utek, but that's not it at all. Hold on here. I know his blog, but he likes to push. He goes, Dr. Scott McCloud. That's it. I've heard him speak. He's very good, and he's like, you know what? Technology is a way that you can give ownership to students. You can actually give them real choice. And if it's like you're going to use Google Slides, well, that's not a choice. But if you're like, here's Google Slides, here's Google Sites, and here's Canva, and here's these other ones, and I want you to pick which one, and he goes, there you're giving them a choice. Now, of course, you know, there might be second grade students, and they might not know how to use all of that stuff, and they may not have time in the day to learn all of it. But as they get older, it, you know, it allows them to kind of think about the process. Well, what am I want to say? What is the information I'm trying to deliver? How do I want to deliver that information? Which tool is the best one? It forces them to consider their audience. Not just, well, here's the information, blah. I just shared it out. I copy and pasted a whole bunch of stuff and put it on slides, and then I'm done with it. So anyway, yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like that. If you think you're done, you're not. You've got it all wrong. Yeah.
And I'm reading over like the updated, just trying to compare this. Like, I know this is high school level, but I'm reading over the newest like IB computer science guidelines. I just really think that having a program like IB computer science in the high school that pretty much develops what you're doing below grade 11 across the board. And because you want to prepare students to take the course.
Yep.
So you would, you know, maybe from grades 8, 9, and 10, you're going to actually look at this IB computer science and pull this down into lower grades, just in sections instead of doing the whole thing. But when you look at just, when you look at the introduction to programming part in IB computer science, it's supposed to be 13 hours of instruction. And, they list all the things that you should be able to accomplish at the end of the 13 hours. You know, they're not telling you what to make, but they're saying, hey, if you really understand this enough to like do this course, then in 13 hours, if you're a grade 11 student, in 13 hours, you should be able to learn this and do the following jobs. And I think that's really what's missing, you know, like, just the kind of like hard demonstrable skills.
So, yeah. That's excellent. Yeah.
So I don't know if EdTech's dying, Patrick. I don't know. Maybe I was too extreme.
Well, I think ISTE might be a little bit behind. And they're considered the benchmark. They're the benchmark for the
what I'm seeing, the reason I feel like it's dying is because everybody's just kind of following it and doing that kind of level one work.
Oh yeah.
I met all the standards, we're finished. And maybe that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. Oh, my kids are using NoReading to practice grammar on their own. But I'm not really following up with it or doing anything with it. And I'm just using that as an example. That's not my school at all, or my kids are using IXL for math, and they're like, well, what do they do? Well, they just practice. Well, I mean, are they making any progress? Are they like, can you take a look at their practice and compare it to their test scores? And are they lining up? Are they making any, you know, what is the progress? Like, how is that being factored into their, not to their grade, but just into how you are assessing them as a student. Yep. Cool. So not quite dead, not quite yet, but I think it is transforming. And I think what tech coaches were doing 10 years ago is not necessarily what they should be doing today. I think that particular role is changing rapidly, into more of a, almost like, I don't know. It's tough. More, they probably will still do that stuff of discovery and teaching and supporting teachers, you know, with services and things like that, but also kind of being able to help teachers take a deeper dive into their curriculum and how they can leverage technology a little bit more effectively than just a service, or if they are using a service, what they can do with that service. Like what data can they pull from it? To better enhance their units, that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
All right.
We'll see. We'll see if my attitude improves.
All right. So on our, hopefully it does. Now our last one, it's about Elon Musk, who just bought a whole bunch of shares in Twitter, right?
Yeah, he did. And I think we have to talk about it, Patrick, because everyone's talking about it.
Yes.
Yes. So there's some stuff he's been posting that's just hilarious. But he posted something that I think is pretty relevant to everybody. And we talk about like auditing stuff. And I'm a big fan of auditing services and subscriptions. And we just found a big one. So,
all right. Yep. Tell me.
We've been paying, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but we've been paying for this service. The school has had it for a long time before I came there. And these things just they just get put in the budget. They just keep getting renewed.
Yep.
And then somebody came up to me and said, you know, I don't really know if anyone's using this anymore. I'm like, oh really? I'm like, okay, well, let's check into it. And they went on their own and they talked to all the teachers and came back and said, I think we can cut our bill by like 75%. Like only one grade level was using it. And it had been budgeted for like 5 or 6 grade levels.
Wow. Okay.
So this Elon posted, you know, he basically said, is Twitter dying? And he took all these accounts, top 10 accounts that had the most followers. Okay. So these, technically the biggest accounts. And he found that the people running these accounts, like Barack Obama, weren't really posting.
Yeah, that's right. Like, yep.
So he's like, where's the growth? Like what's happening here? You've got all these people siloed with these accounts and the people they're following aren't putting anything into the ecosystem. So what does it even mean? Basically, if people are following you, all these people are following you and nothing's happening, like you're not doing anything. So, you know, he's really trying to dig into, is there growth or is there not growth? I mean, how much atrophy is actually happening in the system? Who is actually using it? And should you even look at people who are the top accounts? I mean, maybe that doesn't even matter. Maybe that is a horrible way to decide. And top accounts and systems like Twitter, they have power, right? They can post things with much less oversight. And they probably can sell ads at a higher rate, even though a person might follow 20 people who have smaller followings, but each one of those 20 people are generating way more content in the ecosystem. So in a lot of ways, those 20 people could be more valuable in the aggregate. And so I think Elon's like looking at that stuff, but it's just pretty interesting because he's really trying to ask the question now that he's purchased the stock, and the stock went up like 26% in a week.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
I don't think people understand what that means. If he were to pull out, there would be a massive devaluation. So all the people who work at Twitter who have stock options, this is the best time in their lives in the last like 10 years right now.
Yeah.
Like this is it. And what he's saying is I'm going to stay, but we need to like make this like an actual more profitable company. And he posted all kinds of interesting stuff, but like, again, it's not a criticism. He's auditing the data that's there.
Yep.
So your subscriptions, like social media accounts, schools maintain social media accounts, right? And I always hear people saying, oh, we have to post that on social media. And I'm like, really? Are you sure? Because if you don't need to use the system, you shouldn't use it. It's kind of a security thing too. If you don't need to use something, you shouldn't use it because everything you use has some level of risk. So if you don't need to use Facebook because for whatever reason, your parents or your community aren't really on it and there's no engagement, don't run it just to run it. You can have an official page just so you can claim your page, but you don't need to be posting stuff on it if literally nobody's using it. If you're paying for an email service that emails parents and no one ever checks their email, then you've got a problem.
Yeah.
If parents want to use SMS, you got to use SMS.
That's right.
My school in China, the parents would only really use WeChat. That's all they would use. So all these other systems that come with like PowerSchool and whatever, like it's not even worth your time to set them up. It's not. Like, you know, they're just not, no one is going to read anything you send them that way. So I do think that this is, you know, Elon obviously is a entrepreneur and he's a successful CEO. He's basically using his phone and probably like an app and starting to audit this company rapidly. And he's already discovered multiple, I think he's been posting multiple inroads that would increase the value of the company in just a week. And I think it's just something everybody, you know, everybody can be entertained by, but also I think it's super relevant to all the things that we pay for. I had a little bit of a debate this week with a guy on LinkedIn, and he was asking about school information systems. And I just pointed out, I'm like, Salesforce has a new product, and I've heard from a, you know, from a school that it was expensive, but Salesforce actually did a full data integration for them in their other, into their other systems. So they built a bespoke, like customized data system for them, because Salesforce has like unlimited options for designing the interface and how they're, how you can connect to different data systems. And they have engineers, like they've got a lot of professional people. And then I, you know, I said PowerSchool has those features too. So you have to either do it yourself or you have to pay somebody to do it. But you also can use PowerSchool to, you know, feed other systems and pull information in. But then, you know, he kind of fed back like, oh, well, you could also just use, you know, three lower cost systems and save yourself the hassle. And I'm like, and my point to him was this. Let's say I'm getting ready to buy a new information system, and I have any meeting at all. And in one of those meetings, someone mentions three things that that information system is missing. I told him that within 3 years, he would have to purchase all three of those things. Everyone always says we can live without it, and then they can't. And then it only really takes one person in a school to push to get it.
That's right.
So if that happens like five or six times and you look at your ecosystem, you have like 20, 30, 40 apps, some just being used by one teacher, some being used by grade level, some being used by the whole school. And unless you come up with a plan, like, and put it on your calendar, you're going to forget about them. You're going to license them. You're going to pay for them every year. And you're not really going to know if you're getting your value. So doing this kind of like account auditing is good and it's healthy, and you got to do it kind of early because you can't do it in June because you need to talk to people.
That's right.
You can't just use the stats. Like, you got to go around and say, you know, it doesn't look like it's very busy. And a teacher might say, it's not very busy for everybody, but we have like 20 students who really depend on it. Yeah. And so that's the kind of, you got to get the narrative around the use. You can't just look at the numbers.
Yeah.
So
we were using Screencastify when the pandemic hit. People wanted to make tutorial videos, and Screencastify, since our students had Chromebooks in the middle school, that seemed like a really good solution. And it works great. It's fantastic. But I can log into a dashboard and I can see it's not very active. And so I just asked people, I was like, who's using it? And I got five or six teachers who use it all the time, but it's way cheaper for them just to go and get their own subscription than it is to have a subscription for the entire school, which is what we had, for the entire school and all of our students as well. I'm just like, you know, we don't, you know, it's not good. It's just, we're kind of throwing money away at that point. But I like, man. Yeah. Elon. Oh, did you see Elon? He also tweeted out that he he's like, what do you think? Turning the Twitter headquarters in San Francisco into a housing shelter. He goes, since nobody shows up to work there anymore anyway, since they're all working remotely, is what he's saying. He goes, so why let's use that space for something good.
I mean, it's kind of a joke, but he's making a point. He's like, look, we're not going to be, the company should not be running all these, like managing all this infrastructure and doing all this like operational expense if no one's going to use it.
Yeah, that's right.
So now I think that's probably going to shock some people, because I think some people probably do go into the office occasionally and take advantage of the perks, but then work from home. And he probably has already figured that out.
Yeah.
So, and remember, Tesla doesn't really have a marketing company. It's just Elon on Twitter and, you know, getting interviewed on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like he's good at keeping things lean and developing just what he needs.
Yeah. And so, Tesla doesn't have, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a Tesla commercial on television. I don't even know if I've seen a Tesla commercial in a magazine or in print anywhere, or even on the internet for that matter.
So Scott Adams brought up something really interesting the other day. He was talking about Elon, and Elon's part of the team that developed PayPal.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
A long time ago. So he helped make PayPal.
Was that Peter Thiel too? Was he in there?
Yeah, Peter Thiel and Elon. Basically, everybody that made PayPal didn't just make money off PayPal. They've all been successful afterwards.
Was Jack Dorsey in there?
Here was the gist of what
go ahead.
Of what Scott Adams was saying. He's like, this is what you need to remember. These people got together and made a very successful product, and you're not going to be able to ever remember being sold on that product. For whatever reason, you decided to trust a new payment system, and you have no idea why. Just one day you started using PayPal. You didn't ask if it was safe. You just started using it like everybody else. So whatever they did to make it and however they designed it, you didn't really understand the subtlety. And it was genius. It was genius that they were able to make a product, not advertise it, and make it the premier payment solution for the entire internet.
That's right.
And connect it to eBay without anything. It's just one day you could use PayPal and you felt like it was a good idea.
Yep.
And Scott Adams made the point that people like the people who made PayPal, Elon and the cohort he was working with, like, they know the secret to moving large groups of people into new technology. They've got it down. And it's very subtle, and it's done through a system of getting you to think about doing things differently before it happens. Like, Elon put out, Twitter already has they call it Twitter Blue. It's like a subscription model where you can pay $3.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And he's already put it out, like, maybe everybody should pay $3 a month. So he's already put that out there, and everybody's talking about it. So in the end, if Elon gets Twitter's board to agree that everybody pays $1.50 a month, everyone's going to be fine with it because they were worried about $3. And it's going to come with benefits.
That's right. So all those fake accounts will disappear.
Taking a system that was being controlled by ads. Basically, the way the ad thing works is I spend $10 million to run my ads. You've got a couple people on your platform I don't like. I call you and say, look, I'm going to pull my $10 million if you don't get these people off. So you ban them. And that's why ads are a problem.
That's right. Yep.
So this one move generates more income than they're making with ads. And they're no longer beholden to advertisers. Like, it's a very smart, strategic but entertaining at the same time move.
Yeah, the beholden to advertisers, that dictates. Bill O'Reilly is a great example. Here was the number one cable news show by a large margin was the O'Reilly Factor. Whether you liked it or not, it was number one. It was and all of a sudden these allegations came out that there had been a number of sexual harassment claims from within Fox against him, and they've settled them quietly, but it all came out and people were like, we're going to let all your, we're going to go tell the advertisers, we're not buying your product because you advertise on Bill O'Reilly. Everybody pulled his all the advertisers out, were pulled, and Fox is like, all right, Bill, you're gone. That's it. You're done.
Yep.
We had all this other, we handled, you're done. That's it. You're out. Like it was a matter of days. It was just a matter of days, and they just pulled the plug on him. And same thing with Matt Lauer and NBC. Of course, that guy was an uber creep. But yeah, when they found that out and advertisers started leaving the Today Show, there's like, okay, that's it. He's gone. He's done. He's not coming back. We're going to investigate it. And even if there's nothing there, I don't think we're going to be putting him back. He's just done. He's gone. But man, you're right. Yeah. Cause Twitter is reliant on ads. And another thing is if you think back in 2015, Twitter was not doing well financially. And there were talks that they were like, oh, who should buy Twitter? Yahoo? Should Yahoo buy them? Should Microsoft buy them? Would Alibaba be a good fit? There was all these different companies that were like just being tossed out there. Like who should buy Twitter? And then you had people like Donald Trump, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and other political figures around the world started to use it for their own campaigning and reaching their base. And all of a sudden it became important then. Oh, it's super important. Super, super important. It's really popular. And all of a sudden it became, I don't know, it became way more popular than what it already was. So it's just, yeah. I like this idea where, you know, they're just making themselves independent of advertisers. I think that's a great move.
Well, I hope it keeps going. It would be good to see somebody with money actually do something positive mm-hmm. to a platform that I think a lot of news and journalists use. Like,
yeah,
there's not that many platforms that let you post quickly and make it super simple for people to digest information.
And Jack Dorsey, before he left, he was like, I want to decentralize it. He goes, I hate that we have central, that I've been part of the centralization of the web. Where
that's true. He wants to federate Twitter out still.
He does.
We can talk about that another day, how that works, but he wants to open it up and make the platform have a bunch of little Twitters out there that are controlled by the groups who want to use it.
That's right. And they can put it on any server they want, kind of a deal.
Yeah.
And so Twitter can't be like, we can't take that guy down because that's not on our like official Twitter server.
Right. That's right.
So. Yeah. I like
All right, Patrick, we can talk about that next week.
If you want. We're done. We went long. It's almost an hour here, man.
I know. We got to wrap it up. I had to turn my HVAC back on because I'm sure my child's getting hot. So.
I can hear it. I can hear it. But it sounds
cool. It's roaring in the background.
All right, then. Well, for IT Babble, I am Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. So keep on babbling out there.